Welcome to What Matters Most, Sands Capital's podcast series in which we explore some of the trends and businesses that are propelling the pace of global innovation and changing the way we live and work today and into the future. Today, we are joined by Senior Research Analyst Eric Black, and we'll be discussing an Argentine-based business that sits at the intersection in the global digital economy between large corporations, software as a service, and other enterprise software providers. The company is Globant, the world's largest pure-play design-led digital services provider. Eric's research into global digital transformation uncovered a number of strong players in this dynamic and rapidly growing sector. In the end, Globant rose above the competitors for a number of reasons. Chief among them is the company's laser focus on design. We'll be exploring that advantage as well as what other aspects of the company make it special on today's podcast. So Eric, thanks so much for being with us today. I'll let listeners in on a little secret. Eric is joining us from our offices in London. So Eric, I'm really excited to dig into this business with you. We don't usually get a lot of questions about Globant from clients. It's kind of a lesser known business. So this will be a great opportunity for me and for our listeners to get more familiar with this space in general and then Globant's position within it. So let's go ahead and get started. So as we usually do, before we zoom in, let's talk a little bit about the key nexus, that intersection, or nexus as you called it, that intersection as I described it. Give us a brief overview of what Globant does in a nutshell, and a little bit more about the landscape that it operates in. You know, what are some of the trends, tailwinds, shifts we're seeing that brought this to your attention in the first place?
Great. Well, Kevin, thanks for having me. I love talking about Globant. It is a company that, to your point, flies under the radar a lot, but we find very exciting. So Globant, at its core, is an IT services company. Its clients are large multinational companies, Fortune 500, Fortune 2000 businesses that use Globant as a partner for kind of tech-related projects. Now, what makes Globant unique compared to some other companies is they don't really compete on price primarily. They compete by adding value with cutting edge technologies for their clients. So I think a lot of times people assume, especially in the West, that all IT service companies are labor cost arbitrage models where you're really trying to get low cost labor in developing countries, compete on price, and try to grow your business that way by having international clients just cut their costs and give you their business. Globant's what's called in this industry a digital native. So Globant was founded in 2003, after the dot-com boom, and started off with a focus on high-end technologies, advanced technology at the time. So their original niche and still a core of the company is user experience, digital interface. And they've used that niche to kind of grow a full suite of digital services capabilities that allow it to provide advanced technological help to large clients.
So let me stop you there for a second before we dive too kind of deeply into the company. I'm going to guess that people listening to this podcast have actually used one of their services, especially if you've been to a theme park or maybe taken a cruise or something. Am I right in assuming that? And if so, describe what that is. Again, I think that's really the interesting part of the business here.
Exactly. This sounds all theoretical, very theoretical and abstract. But one of their kind of most famous products is something called the Disney Magic Band. So if you have a child and have been to a Disney theme park or cruise, as Kevin was alluding to in the last, I think, five years, you've probably seen what this is. And it's a little band. It looks like a watch with Mickey Mouse ears on it. But what it does is it syncs up to a digital profile for you and your family. So it ties to your credit card, but ties to any line passes you've reserved, lets you get in and out of your room on cruises or hotels or resorts. And if you go to certain parts of the park, it'll interact dynamically with, statues of Mickey Mouse and things like that. And it might sound kind of simple, but this is an incredibly complicated device to build, maintain, and constantly tweak and update. And it's become a key cornerstone of the Disney park experience. So, it's a great example of the kind of thing Disney would use Globant for. Disney, at its core, is not a tech company, even though I'm sure they have a lot of technology people on staff and programmers on staff. They will go to an expert firm like Globant to design, build, maintain this. And when they do a good job for a company like Disney, you get more work. So Globant's recently been helping more on Disney Plus, trying to make the technology and user experience there better also. They've worked for ESPN.com and ESPN's apps. So they're one of these companies that behind the scenes helps you enjoy Star Wars and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and I've noticed, and you know, those companies all have an expertise in a particular area, maybe not in tech or the digitization of their user experience. But there are some companies I noticed in Globant's customer list that are tech companies. So what is Globant bringing to the table that those companies need that they can't do themselves?
Yeah, you know, there's a common misconception sometimes that the tech companies, the tech giants, do everything in-house. So Google's been a top client of Globant since 2006. And even for the big tech companies, there's always going to be the need to flex up and down on certain projects, which just doesn't make economic sense to have yourself staffed fully for every potential project or skill set you might need. And there's an element of wanting to work with other high-quality groups of programmers for that kind of outside second opinion. As you can imagine, at an enterprise level, you're very selective about who you let in-house to look at the things you're working on and get a sense of how things work under the hood. So once you have a relationship like that, like Globant does with Google, they become maybe counterintuitively more valuable to Google because they've got an established knowledge of Google's inner workings and the trust. And so they do basically the same thing they do for Disney, for Google, just on you can imagine maybe a different level, a different set of projects.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, and again, I took us right into the weeds faster than we probably should have. Maybe step back a little bit and explain how Globant, I mean, you told us what their product is, but how do they make money? How do they earn, you know, an above average rent in their industry?
Sure. So the basic financial model of this company is quite simple. You know, they kind of, their business model is like a consultancy. They charge time and materials for the staff they lend to a client. So it's a pretty simple business model that way. Is a revenue per, you know, head, cost per head, and then you have some back office costs that actually, as you scale up, those fall as a percent of revenue. So it's quite a simple business model. But what's really interesting is even though these are time and material contracts and not officially recurring, in practice, they are recurring, I would argue. And the reason for that is the world's becoming more technology dependent. Technology, as we know, is changing at a rapid pace. For every company in every sector, you need to be managing your data properly. You need to be on the cloud. You need to be understanding what AI tools are available and how to use them. So once you have a trusted partner who can help you with some of that, you tend to give them more work, and the projects that they work on tend to grow in scope. There's pretty much always more to update, always more to make more secure, cyber secure, you know, always more data to analyze. So, it's a basic time and material business model.
Yeah, so it allows, you know, even the tech businesses to focus on what they're good at and let, like Globant, as you commented, sort of do the work of a consultant. I think that's really an interesting angle on the business for sure. And you mentioned AI. So, we're a few minutes into the podcast, and I think we were very conservative, but we mentioned it. So take us through the AI angle here. What is Globant doing, you know, generally or specifically for some of their clients in terms of AI? I see that they're involved in the healthcare industry and drug development industry as well with AI. I don't know if that's relevant or not, but maybe comment on some of the things they're doing.
Yeah. So, a big debate about these companies in general, these IT services companies, is AI, is it a tailwind or a headwind for them, right? How much of their work gets disrupted by AI and how much of it just creates more work for them to do? And our view is that it actually, the industry is getting divided into two groups. There are those that do lower end work, like call centers, where AI is probably net a headwind for the company and going to just disrupt a lot of what they do. But for companies like Globant that, again, are in the higher, more cutting edge technology services and have an expertise in AI, this should be a tailwind that just gets them more work. So Globant's been considered a thought leader in AI since the mid-2010s. They began publishing books about how AI can transform your industry back then. I have one on my shelf right here. And what Globant has done over the last several years is develop its own AI platforms and tools that it used to use internally that it's now selling to clients as an example of some of the things they can do. So one example is a tool called Magnify, spelled with AI at the end to be cute. But it allows for the testing of software or testing of coding, excuse me, to be done automatically by AI and really helps the programmer. So they also, to your point, Kevin, have a number of healthcare clients where they've already helped for many of those clients build internal tools and data management capabilities. They're now bringing their expertise in AI and their AI trained programmers to try to speed up drug development and trial new ways to use the data their clients have to make their own processes more efficient. Now, it's all early days for all these projects, but it is real. And if you watch Globant's earnings calls, they're actually started off by AI generated versions of the CEO, COO, and CFO that look and sound like them that go through all the numbers. So AI is real and they're trying to be ahead of it.
So, you know, again, this is, it's a big market for sure, but I think it's one of those markets that kind of are technologies that operates in the background. Insurance, you don't know you need it until you need it. Consulting, you know, helps businesses in kind of obscure and not always front page ways. I know this isn't a, you know, kind of a pure consulting business, but talk about how you came across the whole idea of digital transformation. I mean, walk us through your research process here. What got you into the general space or interested in it? And then what, as I mentioned at the beginning, caused Globant to rise above the other players there?
Sure. So, you know, we like to say at Sands that good ideas can come from anywhere. And this one came from our colleague and former podcast guest, Danielle Menicella's family trip to Orlando. She had used the Magic Band, loved it, and learned that the company that made it was publicly listed. At the time, we're looking for new technology ideas in emerging markets. And so she passed it on to me. You know, when we first started looking at the sector, you know, IT services, to your point, it's in the background, didn't sound exciting. But the more we dug into it, the more we actually think it's a favorable industry for long-term growth businesses. So first off, just so everyone's clear, at least according to Gartner, IT services is a $1.5 trillion industry, or will be in 2024. And the overall industry is expected to grow at a 10-ish percent CAGR for the next 5 years, again, according to Gartner. Now, the subsegments where Globant is involved, digital transformation, cloud services, AI, is expected to grow faster than that, right? And what's interesting is this is a highly fragmented industry, by the way, as you can imagine, with $1.5 trillion. At the top tier level, you know, the kind of tier one, or considered tier one and tier two vendors for large multinationals, Fortune 500, Fortune 2000 companies, it's actually quite oligopolistic. So at that level, clients prefer to work with usually mid-single digit, 3 to 5 tier one vendors, slightly longer list of tier two vendors, and that's who they prefer to do business with over time. Those relationships tend to be very sticky. There's a lot of trust involved in this. Trust is required in this industry. Consistency and track record are important. And what's pretty critical is these players will generally not primarily compete on price, right? So what matters most to the decider of who you work with, which is usually the CIO or project manager, is will you get me the project on time? Will it work? Will you be there if something goes wrong? It's, you know, it's not primarily on price. The CFO is not making these purchase decisions usually. So as we learned that in our initial reading on this industry, you know, it's large, but it's oligopolistic. You have a few big winners and they tend to scale up with their clients. And usually if they stay on the cutting edge of technology in whatever their niche is, they tend to grow and evolve for many, many years. And so our initial work on this company after Danielle flagged it was really to understand this industry, understand the growth dynamics, the competitive dynamics, and see if it's even an attractive place to look for good businesses. This is before we even just had a strong view on Globant.
Oh, so interesting. Okay, so it kind of makes me think about my experience with not necessarily digital transformation, but companies back years ago before, you know, digitization of stuff, a lot of the consultants were pushing, CRM or client relationship management suites of software, mostly on premises before the, you know, before Salesforce moved sure. to the cloud. And I remember, and I don't have the exact statistics here, but the failure rate is significant in terms of installation versus you know, whether it's actually used post-installation. And I've worked for a large Fortune 500 company before joining Sands a long time ago, and they spent years and millions of dollars putting in an on-premise client relationship management suite of software from one of the big vendors. And the day it went live was the day they started shutting it down. Tell me, you know, is that the same kind of path to product development in the digital transformation world, or do these things more likely, more often than not, succeed and do what they say they're going to do?
Well, I think one thing, I love that anecdote, but Globant has, you know, a negligible amount of client turnover in its book. You know, most of its top 20 clients have been with the been partners for over a decade, and it's very rare that Globant loses a client that's not of its own volition. So, you know, you can see that as an indicator of what Globant does works. So you're not going to keep them around. Right. But also, digital transformations in many ways, and what Globant and the way Globant operates is structurally very different from what you're describing. You know, they really have embraced a kind of agile development methodology that is in the news, in headlines a lot a couple of years ago. But really, they do a scrum-based approach where they take, you know, cross-train teams in different skill sets into small groups of, you know, 5 to 7 people and attack projects bit by bit, often with near constant communication with their client. So there's a lot of flexibility to adjust what is and isn't working. So this isn't a type of work where you just Globant goes into a dark room, works for 3 months and comes out with a product that doesn't work. That is that'd be antithetical to the way this company operates.
Does that tie in with the design first philosophy? Is that related?
I think so. I think management would argue that as well. But also, I think they just see it as necessary. You know, I think one of the challenges of the increasingly digital world we're living in is everything's changing all the time very rapidly. And you do need to constantly test what you're building with the available data, with reality, with hardware, with, you know, your staff of your client. So you do just need to be agile. So that old methodology of on-premise, here's a package software product, it's one size fits all, it's not what Globant does. Those companies still exist, but that's not what you hire Globant for. You hire Globant to build some custom solution that works best for you.
Let's talk a little bit about the pandemic. You know, it's kind of in the rearview mirror for the most part, at least the you know, painful parts of it. But is it fair to assume that Globant got a bit of a boost during the pandemic? Because a lot of companies that thought, yeah, we don't really need a digital presence. We don't really need to connect with our end clients other than in person. All of a sudden realized, you know, if you're not staying in touch in any, you know, through whatever means available, you're going to lose those customers. Was that a fair thesis? Did they get any kind of a bump or bolus during the pandemic in work?
The pandemic, you know, as tragic as it was a massive tailwind for Globant and the industry overall. To your point, their worst, if something, you know, according to Morgan Stanley's CIO surveys, only around a third of CIOs the year before the pandemic in 2019 thought migrating to the cloud was a high priority. As you can imagine, during the pandemic, that had fallen to, 20% or less. I can't even remember the number. It had fallen precipitously. You know, a way to look at it is before in 2019, before the pandemic, Globant ended the year with just under 12,000 employees. And at the end of 2021, it ended the year with just under 24,000 employees.
Wow.
So that was a huge acceleration in demand that had been growing already, but absolutely it was a massive tailwind.
Yeah, that's interesting. The growth is interesting, but talk a little bit about their employee footprint too. I mean, they're not just located in Argentina. I would imagine they're throughout the world, close to their end client. Or how do they attack this global marketplace?
Yeah, so Argentina, and the headquarters is in Buenos Aires. That's where the senior management team, by and large, sits.
Why is that? Is that where they're Why Argentina?
Oh, the founders are Argentine.
Okay, there you go.
It's a great city, good steak. I don't know, but they're from there also. Okay. So a lot of reasons to stay. But Argentina is today around 19% of their headcount. Most of the company has gone outside of Argentina. Colombia is around just over 20% of headcount as of last quarter. India is 15% of the company and growing. Rest of Latin America outside of Colombia and Argentina is about 30% of headcount. And then kind of, you know, they have 15% of their staff scattered around North America, Europe, Middle East. And they've recently began a more concentrated push into Asia. So their strategy is a mix of what's often called nearshoring, which is where you are in a lower cost geography than your client, but in a similar time zone, and offshoring, which is often associated with India, where it's a lower cost center, but in a very different time zone. To get to their clients, 60% of their revenue as of last quarter comes from the United States and North America, which is primarily the United States. Around 20% comes from Latin America, around 20% from Europe, the Middle East, Australia. So they are in different geographies, or their development centers, I should say, and most of their programming staff are in different geographies than their clients. But they have this Latin American core. And what's particularly exciting about them is they've successfully been able to scale up and expand in India already, in smaller countries in Eastern Europe. And we think they can continue to do that in Asia. And the more global your footprint, not only does it just give you access to more high quality talent all over the world in high demand areas, but it means you can support clients in different geographies in their time zone, or at least have part of their support in the same time zone. So that should also unlock more demand for them going forward. But it's absolutely a global company.
You know, one of our criteria is value-added focus, which is really just another way of saying, you know, we get to know the management teams. Maybe talk a little bit about this particular team running this company. Where do they rank in your mind?
Sure. No, I mean, so Globant is run by a founder-led management team. The four founders are still with the company. And the team is led by Martin Migoya, who's been the CEO from day one. He's a CEO and chairman. He's in his early 50s. This is one of the most passionate management teams I've ever met in my career as an investor. They talk Globant. They love Globant. Their entire net worth is tied up in Globant. And if you want to see someone get excited about some AI tool, I don't know anyone you'd want to hear from other than Martin and his team. I really can't say enough, sing their praises enough. They're highly responsive to investor requests whenever we talk to them, which is always a good sign. But they truly have an excellent track record of being driven while being flexible. You know, it's amazing what they built in our mind. And based on our conversations, I think they understand where they need to bring in talent in order to grow the business and where they can develop homegrown talent. And so I internally rank them quite highly amongst the very good management teams that we invest in at Sands Capital.
That's great. Again, you know, founder-led, founder-run, that's always, raises let's call it a flag. I won't call it a flag. It's a flag. So maybe think on the governance front, how do you feel about the fact that the founders are still running the business? Are they the right people to be doing it at this stage of growth?
Yeah, I definitely think Martin is the guy to lead this company. He really is the beating heart and soul of the culture. He has a strong team around him that definitely do not give off the vibe of yes people. And I think our risk, quite frankly, is Martin is the CEO and chairman of the board. Hmm. We've engaged with him in the past about eventually relinquishing one of those roles. He is on board with that at some point, at least in our conversations. But really, I think there might be a bit of a key man risk in theory, since he is a founder with two key titles of the company. I mean, we've met with enough of the C-suite around him and a number of country heads and senior directors at the level below him to have pretty high conviction that there's a very deep bench at Globant, which you'd expect from a high quality kind of, you know, IT services company. So we're less concerned about that. Works out a lot. He's got a rock band that's on Spotify, if anyone wants to check him out. But so we think he's still energized and ready to run this company for many years from now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so just talking about that, the human capital is an advantage. And then, of course, the geographical reach, that maybe is a nice way to segue into what is, in your mind, the characteristics of the company that make them special. And I guess more specifically, what's the competitive moat? Because it is a, you know, it's a huge market, as you said. I got to think there are some established competitors and there's some up and coming competitors. What's going to keep Globant out ahead of those?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And this is a tough industry where the competitive advantages are intangible, right? This isn't an airport where it's the only way to fly into Bangkok or anything like that. So I think there's kind of three key advantages to Globant that are self-reinforcing. One is the brand, right? Globant's 28,000, just under 28,000 employees all over the world today, but they're well-known in their industry, especially in their core geographies. And they're well-known to developers and aspiring programmers in school and to clients. And that's pretty important. So they become an employer of choice in an industry where there's a shortage of labor, right? As I mentioned earlier, the IT services market's expected to grow at around 10% per year going forward. The global developer population, programmer populations, only expected to grow around mid-single digits during that time period. So you have a structural shortage of labor, and it's very hard to get access to that top quality labor, the top tier programmers, the top students, especially if you're not one of the now Magnificent Seven, hyperscaler tech giants, right?
Right.
So Globant has that advantage, especially in its core geographies in Latin America and core cities in India, but increasingly globally. The other is distribution. Not every company can get access to the CIO and top project managers at a company like Disney or FIFA or Discovery, right? There's a very select group you're already in. And so those two, and that helps, these two advantages, reinforce each other. So by working with the top clients, these big MNCs doing the most exciting work, that helps you get access to the best talent and best rising talent, which in turn helps you get better work from your top tier clients. So once you're in this position, it's actually a virtuous cycle of competitive advantages that keep self-reinforcing. And the other big advantage is scale. This might just seem like, oh, you just hire a bunch of people and do it. It's very hard to manage 28,000 people across 30 different countries. You have to have a real organization. That's, if anything, that's the secret, key kind of value add of Globant, is being able to marshal and manage this talent. And it's not easy to do, and it's not easy to do credibly for clients. So you've got this track record, you have this ability to hire and scale. It's been proven across geographies. You have relationships with top companies all over the world and the ability to build new relationships because of those relationships. And so it becomes a virtuous cycle where, as long as you don't dramatically mis-execute on project or fall behind on technology and what the latest technology trends are, it should be these competitive advantages do support each other and are sustainable.
I know they're one of their largest competitors is Accenture. And when you describe Globant's advantage, you're also kind of describing what Accenture is pretty good at too. So why does Globant, in your mind, win over Accenture in this space?
So Accenture is a phenomenal business, a great comp of Globant's. And I think a dynamic in this market is that it's not a winner-take-all industry. As I mentioned at the top, it's an oligopolistic market, which means you should and do have several big winners in the space. Now, of the publicly listed companies, and probably privately, Accenture is by far the largest company in IT services and consulting, and it's a phenomenally well-run business, but it's exposed to all parts of the consulting and IT services supply chain, value chain, from literal consulting to the high-end digital services Globant does, to the BPO cost reduction stuff that legacy IT players do. Whereas Globant's more of a pure play on digital transformation. The other thing is, if we think of Accenture as the gold standard in this industry, Globant's the next rising star and is a clear leader in this kind of user experience digital interface niche. Interestingly, along with Accenture, it's often who they say they compete against. But again, this is a multi-winner market, and we like Globin's direct exposure to some of the fastest growing trends in the industry and clear leadership there. Yeah,
that pure play angle is definitely Sands Capital in a nutshell. I'm thinking this will be a stretched metaphor or reference, but it seems to reflect our transition from big pharma to more targeted biotech businesses. You could get biotech wrapped up in big pharma, but you've got all the other stuff too, the good and the bad. And you know, once you started finding companies that were just pure play in a particular space and you got what you wanted without the baggage, those tend to be great businesses over the long term.
I would agree. And, you know, if you're an investor looking at the space, there's no reason not to look at both. You can look at the high quality, full suite players that are going to be slower growing and stable, like an Accenture, like a Tata Consultancy. But if you want to find the more innovative, I would argue, faster growing companies that are really at the forefront of digital transformation, that's where Globant really shines it's a really disruptor in this space. It's structurally taking market share from legacy players. In a way that Accenture is, but that's a much more mature company.
Yeah. So kind of on that same note, let me kind of flip the script and play devil's advocate here. You know, what they seem to have carved out a nice niche within the oligopoly as one of the primary players. What in your mind is coming down the line that could disrupt that position, not just for maybe Globin, but for really the key incumbents right now?
Yeah. No, I mean, technology is always the big one in this space. You know, I think often these companies find themselves in a lot of trouble if either they have too much client concentration risk, which Globin is kind of grown out of, or if they fall behind on the technology curve and they aren't leaders in whatever the next generation technology is. So the real threat to Globin would be they are not as adept at using Gen AI tools that are being developed now and come out, and the ones we haven't thought of over the next several years. And they anchor too much to legacy technologies that no one cares about. Yeah. Now, with their culture, internal training programs, and digital experience focus, we think that's highly unlikely. That's probably the perennial risk for a company like this. There's a shorter term one, which is, of course, business cycles and cyclicality. Now, Globin's taking market share, but it is still IT budgets are impacted by the broader macroeconomy. No one's fully insulated from that. But that's more of a short-term concern. I don't think we're worried too long.
Did they have some of the same headwinds that a lot of the tech, or at least software companies did, that were supplying software to big enterprise customers over the last year or so, where there was, you could almost call it a mini tech recession as big enterprise IT departments reevaluated their spending priorities. They kind of slowed down on cloud migration and stuff like that. Did that affect Globin? This is like it's a 2022-2023 issue.
It definitely did. And not as bad as some technology companies, but if we look at its revenue growth in 2020 and 2021, it grew revenue 37% and 45% year over year, respectively. In 2022, grew revenue 15%. And in 2023, we're expecting that to be closer to 10%. So a massive deceleration in growth. But as you'll notice, even though IT budgets for many companies didn't grow or even contracted, Globin has still been able to grow. Part of that's through M&A, but most of that, we believe, is organic. And that's that share gain story, where Globin, as companies have had to tighten their budgets, yes, there's some focus on cost takeout, but there's more of a focus on vendor consolidation and reassigning what dollars you have to the partners that are going to help you grow and transform your company as you exit a recession. And Globin's been a key beneficiary of that. And as much as it's been a bad time to maybe be an investor going into a down cycle in a company that's being hit by cyclical headwinds, they have so far been, we think, proving our thesis that they're going to be taking wallet share in this industry.
What about expense control? You noted that they doubled their headcount over the pandemic. A lot of tech companies did that in anticipation of kind of a straight line up into the right sort of growth dynamic, and then got caught not caught, but maybe too much capital expense as the market or revenue started to slow down. We refer to that internally here as the bullwhip effect. Is that something that they confronted, and how they dealt with it, if they have?
Not to the same degree as a lot of our tech companies. And that's because most of Globant's costs are structurally variable. So there's very little really SG&A costs or R&D costs as a percent of revenue. It's a small piece of the company. Their big costs are on staff. You know, they're kind of their COGS are how much they pay their developers. So when the labor market got tight in 2022, 2023, their gross margin, so kind of the best proxy for their profitability, kind of fell from around 39% in 2019 to around 36% earlier this year. So significant, but not as bad as some, right? And still profitable, still highly profitable companies. And what's now been happening is the labor market, especially in tech, has loosened considerably. Less so for what Globant does, to be completely transparent, because they are looking for almost always, you know, highly specialized staff. But still, they've been able to process those costs very well. And it's part of the beauty of these business models. Unlike many technology businesses, these are very profitable companies, highly free cash flow generative. And in Globant's case, pretty much no debt on the balance sheet. So they're easily able and variable costs. So they are able to scale up or scale down their cost structure pretty quickly with changing market dynamics.
So, you know, in your description of this business, it's, as you mentioned, it's operating in intangibles, right? It's not a factory. It's not a store. So give us some insight in how you cover a company like this. What do you do differently that you for the Globant that you might do in a kind of brick and mortar or a company that has, tangible product?
Yeah. So, you know, at Sands Capital, we value on the ground research, which to your point is difficult when it's an intangible advantage you're trying to analyze. So, you know, our initial process was understanding the industry, as we just discussed, make sure we understood the dynamics and competitive landscape. With this company, what we then did is we worked with expert networks. We're able to recruit people we could speak to who used to work for the company, or used to work for Globant, used to work for competitors or clients of Globant or peers. And we did, honestly, dozens of, you know, many hours of these types of calls to make sure we got a holistic picture of how Globant's viewed by the labor, you know, the programmers, how Globant's viewed by customers, and the type of work Globant does and how that's evolved over time. And that helped paint a picture of not only a consistent picture that was very positive on Globant and their cutting edge capabilities, and as well as fill out the overall industry competitive dynamic. And then once we had a better understanding of that, we visited some of their offices. You know, a big issue with a company like Globant is as you go global, how do you maintain a high quality development standard and delivery standard? You know, it's one thing to just do it from Argentina and some nearby countries. How do you also do it in India? So we went to their India office, toured it, spent hours with the management team understanding the incentivization structure, the integration processes, how they train staff. And then once that was a positive, and that was a very positive interaction. It was basically what we expected and very different from any of the legacy IT players in India who we also met with. And then the last step in this process was me getting the portfolio managers down to Buenos Aires to meet with the senior management and really kind of make sure we understood the corporate culture there and made sure it was similar enough to what we saw in India, that there really was consistency across geographies. That was a stressful process as an analyst. I would say at Sands, there was a lot of internal biases and assumptions that this was a commoditized industry, that we weren't finding great, that we couldn't find great businesses. Now, our work had shown, we argue, that that wasn't the case, but there was still skepticism. So I remember bringing down all these portfolio managers to Buenos Aires. We got to their headquarters and we're waiting for management. And so some of the staff are showing us around. And the first thing they show us is this machine they're excited about. We go into this little laboratory-like area and it looks like a little claw from like a children's. It looks like something your kid would make for a third grade science project. One of the PMs just turned around and stared daggers at me. and whispered, I can't believe you dragged me all the way to Buenos Aires for this.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the meeting ended up being fantastic and we ended up investing shortly after that meeting. But honestly, it's a lot of touch points with a company like this. And since we invested, I've gone to offices all over the world, all across Latin America, India, Europe. And really, you're constantly trying to test for that quality of staff, you know, that commitment to excellence, that consistency. And you're constantly talking to former clients, competitors, et cetera.
Yeah. And kind of, I guess, another data point that shows you the power of this company and their brand. Looking at their investor page on their website, they note that they are in 2023, they were the fastest growing IT brand and the fifth strongest brand globally, according to their own report. So take that with a grain of salt. But brand value, they note, is somewhere between, it's around $1.6 billion in 2023, 38% or 33% growth in brand value. So you like them, but so do a lot of other people, clearly.
Yeah, no, I mean, a question we'll often get now with this company that I never got back in 2019 is, what's the insight? You know, in the past, it was, who are they? Why would you invest in IT services? Now people who know the space know who Globant is. And I think we really have kind of three big insights. One is that this is an oligopolistic industry structurally. So once you're in that oligopoly, and it's a sticky relationships once you're in there. The other is that we've shifted from a price-led model in IT services, this value-led model. And the third is that Globant has this virtuous cycle of competitive advantages that actually gets stronger over time. And there are some other companies that applies to in the space. There's multiple winners in this industry. But I think it's that last bit in particular that's not well understood. That yes, Globant's strong today. Yes, Globant's rising in the brand rankings. But as long as it's not mismanaged, that will continue to allow them to get more talent, get more exciting projects, and continue to further strengthen the brand. So I think it's that duration of growth and the duration of the competitive advantage. And I'd argue how unique it is and how few companies are truly in this oligopolistic winner group that are the key kind of insights here.
Yeah, I like that. I'm forgetting the name of what you just called it. Virtuous cycle.
Virtuous cycle. Yeah.
Virtuous cycle. Yeah. There are only a few companies in the history of SANS that kind of fall into that category. When you see it, it's a powerful, powerful advantage for them.
Extremely. And often it's not something that's immediately obvious. It's usually a lot of little things, in this case, I'd argue three, that come together and make that cycle happen.
Yeah.
But when you have it, I agree, it's incredibly powerful. And I'd say we're very optimistic on the company for a very long
time. We've covered a lot of topics here. I'm going to throw a few jump balls out as we end here. Let's.
I love it.
Yeah. Good. Well, maybe give us kind of some thoughts on the environmental, social, and governance front. How do they rate? Are there any issues, any flags that jump up, or any successes you'd note in the company?
Globant's been carbon neutral since 2021, which sure is a bit of an indication. This part of their business is structurally not very carbon intensive, but with their global footprint in countries that don't have green energy infrastructure, we think that really shows their commitment to kind of environmental best practices. Their disclosures, we're generally very happy with their disclosures on their website. But a big thing for Globant as a company that grows by hiring staff is their labor rights and labor practices. Not only have we seen no issues historically with Globant, as it'd be very highly rated when we look at employee rankings or size of employees of these companies. Globant actually is a leader in the industry in terms of gender diversity. So as of last annual report, around 27% of staff are women, which is generally very high for an IT services companies. And 32% of directors and manager level staff are women as well. And this has been part of a concentrated effort by Globant to improve gender diversity in the industry overall and in its own company. They have initiatives on sexual orientation diversity, on ethnic national diversity. This also helps their core business. By being a more inclusive, open culture, especially in a technology industry, they're able to attract more and more talent and a broader suite of people to come to their company. So we actually see Globant as a great example of best practices that also align with business interests.
In terms of their customer base, are they fairly selective or careful about, you know, what kind of work they do for individual clients or customers? Are there any, you know, state-owned enterprises that may want to build certain nefarious digital technology that Globant, you know, would be an enabler of?
Great question. To the best of our knowledge, no. So yeah. Globant has, you know, over 1,500 different customers, but generally what they focus on explicitly, Fortune 500 to Fortune 2000 businesses. Some of those in emerging markets might have state-owned ownership, like they work for Itaú, for example, in Brazil. But these are generally not nefarious companies. And as far as we're aware, no defense, no state security companies are on their in problematic geographies or in their client list. So they do work with police departments in countries like the UK, but from what we've heard, nothing that would raise any red flags.
One question that kind of pops into my mind too, just when a company, a large enterprise, is building out a digital presence, they're ostensibly building a door into their business that bad actors can enter through. You know, so is cybersecurity an issue, or any kind of thoughts on that in terms of their approach to that that issue?
Cybersecurity is a huge kind of risk factor for them. It's also a huge business for them. So they have a cybersecurity studio. And as much as we like to talk about Globant as a user experience focused company, which it is, it's most of what they do is really the stuff around it. So they're able to, their real value add to clients often is taking top tier digital engineering, cybersecurity, cloud practices, and marrying it with true design professionals who have a deep understanding of that world. Cybersecurity is a massive business for them. Globant actually had a minor hack in 2022. It was a very few clients were impacted, and Globant was very quickly able to stop the hack. No significant data was leaked. You know, no critical data was leaked. This is, I'd say, a perennial risk in this space, but more of an opportunity for Globant. I think they've proven with all the projects they do and their scale, the fact that they've had almost no hacks ever. And when it happens, they react very quickly, I think is a testament to their work. And they lost no clients from it, which at the end of the day, if your clients are comfortable, that's kind of what matters the most.
Yeah. Hacks seem to be just table stakes now. I mean, I hate to say it, but we live in a world where if you told me that a company XYZ hasn't had a hack, I'd kind of wonder if, you know, we're paying close enough attention.
But the hack question really highlights how digital our economy is and how important companies like Globant are for their clients. Because even if you have a great cybersecurity team internally at Disney, you're not going to take the risk of only having them look at your cybersecurity. Whether it's Globant or another company, you will have partners just to sanity check that, because it's so mission critical to your company. I think a big thing people should understand about Globant is what they do is longer term mission critical for any business. You know, I like the way you framed it. They make doorways to users and to clients and to employees. That's needed. You know, that's not an option anymore in a modern digital economy.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's done well, it's a great experience. If it's not done well, it can significantly damage your brand for their customers, I'm guessing.
That's right. You're not going to be focusing too much on price when it comes to what's the best app to interact with your customers with, or who's the best vendor of cybersecurity services or consulting services. That's usually not where you're going to cut corners.
Yeah, reputations are definitely lost when you're on hold at a call center, or if the app doesn't get you to where you want to go. Well, that's great. We've touched on a lot here. Anything you want to leave us with? Any maybe issues or questions or topics that we missed?
You know, the one thing I want to maybe reiterate is people are constantly looking for growth businesses to invest in, companies that are going to benefit from the way the world changes, and especially with AI and digitization. And yet everyone appropriately in many ways focuses on the Magnificent Seven and the other tech giants. But I think what Globant is a great example of is there are just kind of low below the radar companies that are great investments, that are great businesses that also benefit from this trend and quite frankly enable this trend, that actually allow big companies to take these cool new tools, whether it's cloud or Gen AI or whatever the next thing is, and actually use them in the real business. So, just because these are under the radar companies doesn't mean they're not exciting and changing the world themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't want to keep the conversation going too long, but it does bring to mind this idea that, you know, we've kind of been honing for years here at Sands Capital around technology and kind of the path to growth. There's the concentration phase. New technology comes out. There are a few winners that are the key enablers of that technology. And then you have the diffusion stage where that technology starts to work its way throughout the rest of the economy. And I think what sounds like what you're saying is Globant is the kind of company that enables that diffusion. It doesn't happen by itself. You have to have companies that can help facilitate the implementation of AI or the implementation of certain tech tools that are out there in the world, but they'll just sit there out in the world unless a Globant comes in, figures out how you as a business can use these to the greatest effect.
That's completely correct. And not only is Globant a key kind of winner of and enabler of the distribution phase, but because that's what they do, the growth wall is pushed far out there. There's not a single product or single technology they work on that once that saturates its market, they're down to a steady, X growth level. You don't have to worry about a second act with this company. We often talk at Sands about growth of a company. There's a first act, and then maybe there's a second or third act. They can come up with new things to do. Yeah. Globant's always, as long as there's new technologies and Globant doesn't take their eye off the ball, there's always going to be new things for them to do. And so you're constantly going to be diffusing new technologies.
It's that whole idea too, that things change, new things pop up, but there are a lot of things that stay the same. And one of those things that stays the same is every company will have a problem that needs to be solved. And more increasingly, those problems are on the digital front. And so as long as there are problems, there will be consultants and there'll be work for Globant to do, it sounds like.
Well said, Kevin. This is why you host the podcast.
Yeah, well, just popped into my head there. Well, thanks, Eric. I really appreciate it. This is a really interesting conversation about a company that arguably I followed from a distance, didn't know that much about, but as I dug into it, I realized it's a company that makes my life better in ways that I don't even think about. So,
especially if you have kids and go to Disneyland.
Fortunately, my kids will have kids soon that'll go to Disneyland, so I'm out of that realm. Or maybe I'm supposed to take their kids at some point. But anyway.
Well, Kevin, thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate it, Eric. It's probably nighttime for you, so time to sign off. Have you caught all of the episodes of What Matters Most? Make sure you catch season 2 episodes of Formula One, Dexcom, Integris, Visa, Reliance Industries, and Axon Enterprises. You might be surprised by what you learn. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
The views expressed are the opinion of Sands Capital and are not intended as a forecast, a guarantee of future results, investment recommendations, or an offer to buy or sell securities. The views expressed are current as of the episode date and are subject to change. This material may contain forward-looking statements which are subject to uncertainties outside of Sands Capital's control. The securities identified do not represent all of the securities purchased or recommended for advisory clients. There is no assurance that any securities discussed will remain in the portfolio. You should not assume that any investment is or will be profitable. A company's fundamentals or earnings growth is no guarantee that its share price will increase. For more information, including a full list of portfolio holdings, please visit our website at www.sandscapital.com.